It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegman.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
felony disenfranchisement in Virginia is an outgrowth of the Jim Crow era. After Congress passed the 15th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, a number of southern states, including Virginia, decided that they needed to figure out how to circumvent the federal constitutional amendment without overtly violating it. In Virginia, between 1901 and 1902, a constitutional convention was held, and one of the products of that convention was Virginia's existing felony disenfranchisement law.
LaTanya Reed, policy analyst with the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, discusses car title lending, as well as restoration of voting rights, and why disallowing the vote to convicted felons is bad policy and a shameful remnant of Virginia's racist laws. And you'll learn when consumer credit counseling can help with your debt problem, and when it will do more harm than good, in our weekly question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 35, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Many Virginia hospitals have indigent care programs to serve families with income up to 200% of poverty. In the Richmond area, these programs are offered by the four Bon Secours hospitals, which are Richmond Community Hospital, St. Mary's Hospital, St. Francis Hospital, and Memorial Regional Medical Center, as well as the three HCA hospitals, which are Chippenham Johnston Willis Medical Center, Enrico Doctors Hospital, and Retreat Hospital, as well as the Medical College of Virginia. Bon Secours Hospitals have a financial assistance program that provides free care to all qualified patients with income at or below 200% of poverty, and a community service adjustment to all uninsured patients that reduces the charges for medically necessary services by 30%. HCA hospitals have a more limited program that provides free emergency room treatment for uninsured and underinsured patients with incomes at or below 200% of poverty. MCV also has a program called Indigent Care/VCU that covers medically necessary services. In other news, legal aid has found a new and creative way to address domestic violence. In granting a protective order, a court can award a car that is marital property, whether individually or jointly titled, to the domestic violence victim. But if personal property taxes are owed on any marital vehicle, then no registration on any vehicle can be renewed with DMV. Until now. Legal Aid's client had a jointly titled car awarded to her under a protective order. Her abusive husband owned his car individually, and he left the state with taxes owing on both cars. When the victim tried to pay the taxes due on just her car, she was stopped from renewing her registration. Legal Aid sent a letter and a copy of the protective order to the tax office and asked for the taxes on the two vehicles to be separated from each other. The tax office did so and allowed registration to be renewed once the victim paid the taxes on just her car. This procedure can be followed by other domestic violence victims. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is food stamps. Food stamps is a federal program that pays for food for low-income households. Recipients are given a card, like a debit card, that can be used to buy food. In Virginia, the card is called the Cardinal Card. Food stamps are given to a household, a group of people who buy and prepare food together. They don't have to be related to each other or share their income. Households must have low resources and low income to get food stamps. Call or visit your local Department of Social Services for information about applying for food stamps. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's Legal Term of the Week.
It's time for the weekly question and answer session. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Joe, and I'm from Richmond.
Thanks for being on the show, Joe. Tell us, what question do you have for us this week?
My question for you is, how would I go about, I guess, consolidating all of my credit, like all the money that I owe, as far as student loans and various other debts?
Things like credit cards, old medical bills, things of that nature?
Yes, sir.
Well, Joe, what you would do is contact a licensed consumer credit counseling agency. You can find a list of licensed consumer credit counseling agencies through the State Corporation Commission, and it's really important to contact only a licensed agency because it's illegal to offer consumer credit counseling or what's called a debt management plan unless you have a license from the State Corporation Commission. And we see many out-of-state companies and even some Virginia companies that are offering this service, and they're doing so totally illegally, and any money that you give them, they're likely to just steal. But if you're dealing with a legitimate business, what they will do is ask you for a list of all, and I have to stress the word all, of the creditors to whom you owe money. Hopefully these are your unsecured creditors, that is, creditors that if you don't pay them, they have no direct claim on any property of yours. Like if you're buying a car, that's a secured creditor, and they're not likely to take part in the plan because if you don't pay for the car, they can just repossess it. But if you're dealing with unsecured creditors, they'll contact all of your unsecured creditors and see if they're willing to work together in a plan where you make one monthly payment a month to the consumer credit counseling agency, and they in turn pay your creditors. And they may not pay your creditors everything you owe them. In fact, usually you'll get most, if not all, of the interest forgiven, most, if not all, of the over-limit fees and late fees forgiven, possibly even some of the principal, the amount owed on the debt, forgiven. But they're not going to save you 50%, 75%, etc. If you see an ad like that, run, because they're lying. It's just not truthful. They can save you some amount of money, but nowhere near the 50 to 75% that some of these ads claim. The most important thing is to be sure that the plan is affordable, because if you do pay it and finish the plan, then all of your debts will be wiped out, and it's a great alternative to bankruptcy. Bankruptcy, you can only file once every 8 years, and it stays on your credit report. If you pay off your debts under a consumer credit counseling plan, then that's much better for your credit report. But the plan should not last any longer than 4 years. Otherwise, it's just not going to work. And even the best of plans, only half of them succeed. So it's something to look into, but look into very carefully. Is this something you're thinking of looking into?
Yes.
And have you actually spoken with any agency or just simply in the thinking about it stage?
Just thinking about it.
Okay, well, I've certainly given you more to think about. Thanks for being on the show, Joe. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR. We're here at the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, and we're speaking with a policy analyst, LaTonya Reed. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Now, LaTonya, the two issues that you are focused on at the General Assembly are car title lending and restoration of rights. Let's talk first about car title lending. Tell our listeners, what's the issue? Why this is important?
Car title lending is a form of predatory lending that really threatens the financial security of Virginia's families. It is a type of lending that began in Virginia a few years ago, beginning in 2005. And essentially, a car title loan is a cash loan that a person can obtain provided that they give up the title to a vehicle owned outright as collateral. We know that there are approximately, or at least I should say, 115 car title loan companies currently operating in Virginia. We don't have an exact figure, however, because these companies are unregulated. There is no state agency that collects data regarding the number of car title loan companies or the business practices of these companies.
Now, what is the interest rate that's charged on these car title loans?
The interest rate for car title loans ranges from 25 to 30% per month, and that amounts to 300 to 360% APR.
And what happens when someone takes out that type of a high-cost loan?
Oftentimes, people find themselves simply unable to maintain the monthly payments associated with these loans, and so they have to seek assistance from family members, friends, churches. In the worst-case scenarios, people lose their vehicles to repossession.
Well, now, I thought that there were usury laws, at least some usury laws left, that limited interest rates. How are the car title lenders able to charge 360% per year interest?
That is an excellent question. In Virginia, we do have some usury laws remaining on the books. There is a usury law that places a 12% interest rate cap on loans. However, there are several exceptions to that usury law. One of the exceptions is the Consumer Finance Act, and that section of the Virginia Code places an interest rate cap on small loans, loans of up to $2,500, and that interest rate cap is 36%. Car title lenders typically provide small loans. Therefore, logically, they should be regulated by Virginia's Consumer Finance Act. However, what they do is package their products to look like open-end credit transactions. By doing so, they are able to operate under Virginia's open-end credit statute and circumvent those usury laws that you just mentioned.
Now, by open-end credit, you're talking about a loan that looks like a credit card?
It looks a lot like a credit card, and essentially, it has no definite repayment date. A person can make payments into perpetuity.
So when a borrower comes in with their car title and their car that presumably is owned free and clear, how much are they going to be able to borrow on the car, and exactly how does the transaction work?
Car title lenders typically loan up to 50% of a vehicle's wholesale value. A typical transaction works like this. A person drives their vehicle, owned outright, to a car title loan store. Someone inside of the store comes out and inspects that vehicle to determine the wholesale value. And as I noted before, the wholesale value is important because it's the basis for determining the loan amount. Once the loan amount is determined, the person gives up the title to their vehicle along with a set of keys. In exchange, they receive cash. So the keys are given up to facilitate easy repossession in the event of default.
Now, when does the borrower have to pay that loan back? You said there's no set term, so how does it work? You say it's like a credit card.
Since car title lenders have decided to operate under Virginia's open-end credit statute, they are required to give borrowers at least 25 days to repay a loan, and during that time, interest is not to accrue. In reality, a number of borrowers, the vast majority of borrowers, are unable to repay the loan in full within the 25 days. Therefore, they get hit with the high interest payments, the high interest rate.
And when they are unable to repay the loan in full, I gather every month pretty much most, if not all, of their payment is going to interest. Is that correct?
That's exactly right.
So what happens when month after month they just pay the payment, they're basically paying nothing but interest, they may still owe the same amount they borrowed or even more? What happens then?
You know what? What we have seen is that a number of people become overwhelmed and they reach out to places like the Virginia Poverty Law Center. They reach out to churches. They reach out to places like the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy looking for help. And as I noted before, in the worst case scenarios, people lose their vehicles.
So they do get repossessed.
They do, in fact, get repossessed.
Now, after they're repossessed, are the vehicles sold, or do we know what happens to them?
What we know at this point is that once a vehicle is repossessed, they are sold at auction. Unfortunately, we don't know how many vehicles are repossessed each year because, as I noted earlier, there's no state agency that collects this data. There's no state agency that regulates this particular practice. What we do know, however, is that there is an auction company in Montville, Virginia, that reserves one day each month to sell cars repossessed by one particular car title lender. So we know that repossessions do, in fact, take place with some degree of regularity.
So what do you see as the solution to this problem?
At this point, we need comprehensive reform to deal with open-end credit abuses. We certainly need to do something about the interest rate that car title lenders charge. The interest is what traps people in debt and what ultimately causes people to become unable to repay their loan. Car title lenders, as I noted before, typically provide small loans. Most of the loans that we have seen have been for less than $2,500. Therefore, these companies should be regulated under the Consumer Finance Act, which deals with loans in that price range. It caps those loans at 36%.
Okay, switching gears entirely now, the other issue I know you're working on is restoration of rights. Tell us what the issue there is and why this is a problem.
The issue with restoration of rights is essentially this. In Virginia, only the governor possesses authority to restore an individual's right to vote. Once a person is convicted of a felony in Virginia, they lose the right to vote. The existing voting rights restoration process is complicated, it's long, and it really and truly prevents people who pay their debt to society by completing the terms of their sentence from truly reintegrating into their communities. So what we want to do at this point is to initiate reform with respect to the voting rights restoration process.
So you're saying that one individual and only one individual, namely the governor, whoever he or she might be, is the only person in Virginia who can restore your voting rights after you have been convicted of a felony?
That's exactly right. Now, the governor does receive some support. The Office of the Secretary of the Commonwealth accepts applications submitted by individuals who seek to have their right to vote restored. But at the end of the day, the governor makes the final decision.
Now, the information that you've put out to the public says that there are over 300,000 Virginians who have felony convictions who are barred from voting, even though they've completed their sentence, they've served their debt to society, they're back integrated with the rest of us. Do you have any notion as to how many per year are asking to restore their voting rights through the governor?
At this point, I don't have the specific numbers. What I do know is that Governor Kane has restored the rights of over 2,000 individuals. Governor Warner restored the rights of, I believe, nearly 2,000 individuals. So we know that there are lots of people who are trying to get through the voting rights restoration process, but they often hit roadblocks.
So it sounds like it's a couple a day that are coming through if it's 2,000 in, say, a 3 or 4 year term.
You know what? That is a reasonable estimate. And just keep in mind, I noted numbers that reflect how many people have regained the right to vote, but I don't have numbers regarding how many people have initiated a process without regaining their right to vote.
And the people who are convicted of a felony, I assume that they are disproportionately of some ethnicity or age group?
We know that African Americans and Hispanics are disproportionately affected by the current voting rights restoration process.
And what is the rationale that Virginia has had in the past for such a restrictive means of gaining one's voting rights after you've been convicted of a felony?
Voting rights restoration in Virginia, or better yet, felony disenfranchisement in Virginia, is an outgrowth of the Jim Crow era. After Congress passed the 15th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, a number of southern states, including Virginia, decided that they needed to figure out how to circumvent the federal constitutional amendment without overtly violating it. In Virginia, between 1901 and 1902, a constitutional convention was held, and one of the products of that convention was Virginia's existing felony disenfranchisement law. The law was put in place to deliberately prevent African Americans from exercising their right to vote.
And I've heard it said that this is one of the most restrictive, if not the most restrictive, disenfranchisement laws in the country. Is that an accurate assessment?
That is certainly accurate. Only Virginia and Kentucky require individuals to seek executive clemency after they've been released from incarceration or completed their sentences in terms of probation and parole to go to the governor.
So what is the solution here? What's it going to take to bring about voting rights restoration reform?
At this point, we really need to establish a role for the General Assembly to play when it comes to voting rights restoration. At this point, the General Assembly has no authority whatsoever to pass legislation regarding restoration, to pass legislation that establishes a process. So we want to give the state legislature a role in the process, an opportunity to streamline the existing process and to correct inefficiencies.
Is this something that can be done by statute? Is it going to require more than that? What will it take?
A constitutional amendment is what's required at this point. The Constitution of Virginia gives the governor sole authority to deal with the issue of voting rights restoration. So in order for the General Assembly to get a role in this process, the state constitution must be amended. As you know, in order for a constitutional amendment to take full effect, it must be introduced during one session. It must pass both the House and the Senate. There must be an intervening general election. After that intervening general election, the next session, the constitutional amendment must be considered and passed by both houses. Once that happens, then the measure goes to the public for a vote.
So, since we're having a general election in 2009, it would take passage this year, then next year, and then the public votes on it in 2010.
There you go.
Thank you so much. We have been talking to LaTanya Reed. She is a policy analyst at the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy. We have been talking about car title lending and also restoration of voting rights. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
This week's top three tips are about surviving debt. The first tip is that you should pay your most important bills, debts, and judgments first, and your least important bills, debts, and judgment last, or not at all. The second tip is that you always should pay current and needed living expenses first. Usually, this means food, housing, utilities, current medical care, car payments, insurance, child support, spousal support, and income taxes not automatically taken from your wages. The third tip is that your most important creditor generally is not the one who shouts the loudest, the longest, or the most often. collectors for credit cards and old medical debts usually harass you because they have no better way to get you to pay. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Today is the last day for each house of the Virginia General Assembly to complete work on the budget and revenue bills of the other house and appoint conferees. Join us next week in the third of our three-part series when Michael Cassidy, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Institute, explains how Virginia's $3 billion budget hole could be closed without harmful funding cuts by carefully closing wasteful tax loopholes. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wakeman.